Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben. And in this episode, we're welcoming Dr. Christine Whelan, author, speaker, thought leader, researcher, and the purpose professor at Emory University. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We are so excited, and thank you so much for being with us. We've been looking forward to talking to you because one of your areas of expertise is a major theme for us this year. But before we get into that, and I assure you, we will get very into that, can you tell us what led you to the work that you're doing today? Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
So I am the purpose professor at Emory University, which is a really fabulous title, by the way. I mean,
for sure.
It really is.
I love it. The idea of asking these big questions of purpose and meaning, especially for young adults who are in this time of transition, and they are transitioning out of high school and into college. And then within 4 short years into the work world and into adulthood, or whatever that means. So we're really meeting young people where they are at Emory right now. Before being the purpose professor at Emory, I was known as the happy professor at UW-Madison in the School of Human Ecology there, where I taught classes on buying happiness and how we can spend our limited resources in keeping with our values to try to maximize our well-being. So my work really is at that intersection of what matters most to you, why does it matter, and then how you can make it happen in your life. And I did a PhD in economic and social history, which was this wonderful interdisciplinary degree that kind of allows me to do all of these things. So it's been quite a fun ride with things like the happy professor and the purpose professor on my business card.
Right. Yeah. The recent resume is looking really good. Keep the titles up. That's awesome. Now, I suppose one might be thinking, like, why are we having the purpose professor on our podcast? Maybe it's not much of a question, because I think depending on where you are in your like career journey, or your journey like in the credit union movement, or, you know, all kinds of businesses that are, you know, a part of our audience, I think that Sue and I have seen plenty of good examples where businesses that are rooted in their purpose, businesses that are, you know, built in the foundations of their passion, the stuff that they really care about, are the ones that tend to succeed or maybe see success sooner. So like, I'm just going to go ahead and answer. I don't know if I'm even asking a question. I'm just going to say there is so much good to be done by understanding purpose and things like that when it comes to business and growth and all of those things, that there's so much logic to us talking to you today. So I'm so excited to like dive in, and I'm sure we'll hear plenty more of that. I hope I didn't steal any thunder, but.
Oh no, not at all.
We first met you.
Oh, see, I'm already jumping in. I'm already trying to steal your
thunder. No, go. Yeah.
So yes, we first met at a credit union summit, and right. where I was talking about this idea of consuming happiness purposefully and how we could use our limited resources to really make ourselves happy. But when I define happiness, happiness and purpose are part and parcel of what we are really going for, because we're all looking for a life of thriving. And if we think about thriving, what that means is having everything in the right balance and having everything that we need to really grow and prosper. But the thing that's also interesting about thriving is that it's not always just about me. It's more about the collective we as well. And that is actually one of the key things when it comes to purpose in the business world, in the credit union world, is that purpose at its core is pro-social. And what that means is that purpose is thinking about not just your own flourishing, but that of the greater social good. It's about a larger idea of how you can use your gifts in keeping with your values to make a positive impact on the world around you. So that's why I have loved speaking several times in the credit union world, because these are folks who really, I think, get the idea of purpose in business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The question that I was going to ask first was some things that you've learned about purpose in your work that surprised you or might surprise others to learn. So to us, no surprise to hear credit union people maybe taking your message really well, or, you know, being in line with some of the things that you're teaching and the work that you're doing. Any surprises you've seen, or, and maybe a question just because I'm curious, spill the tea a little bit, Christine, any industries that maybe haven't been so open to what you've been preaching, for lack of a better word?
Absolutely. Okay. So first, the surprise. I've been studying purpose for more than a decade. And when I say studying purpose, what I mean is reading all the excellent academic research around purpose, reading so many of the self-help books on purpose that are mostly geared for individuals in midlife and beyond. And then what I wanted to do is sort of translate this into actionable small steps programs that people, like real normal people, could use in their everyday lives, not in theory, but actually in practice. And the big surprise came during the pandemic, when I was doing all of my talks on purpose, albeit via Zoom. And I realized at the end of one of my talks, where I was really talking about the importance of having a life purpose, that it seemed kind of silly to talk about your life purpose when you didn't even know what tomorrow was going to bring. When we were in this incredible time of uncertainty, the idea of thinking about purpose in life seemed not just overwhelming, but kind of silly. And so I said, oh, what about doing a daily purpose statement? What about, instead of thinking about your life purpose, thinking about what you're going to do tomorrow to be purposeful in just one day? And really do the next right thing. Take it one day at a time. And I had originally designed this as sort of like a pandemic twist on my work as a way to deal with this uncertainty. What I actually learned that was really surprising was that this idea of a daily purpose statement really is, I think, the most helpful way to think about purpose. Because often when we think about purpose in this big idea of building something in the future, it's easy to push it aside today and say, well, I'm going to get to that later. But if you think about how you're going to use your gifts in keeping with your values to do something to help others in a pro-social way today, well, then you've got much more of a deadline to put your purpose into action. So I think I kind of discovered something really important about lived purpose because of that pandemic uncertainty. And now when I talk to people about purpose statement exercises, I encourage people to think about it in terms of a daily exercise, in terms of a weekly exercise, even in terms of like a, you know, for this fall semester, I will do this, or for the holiday season, I will do that, as a way of chunking things into smaller, more manageable bits of time. And then to your second question about what industries have been a little more resistant to these ideas, it's less about particular industries and more about particular job descriptions. We, as a culture, seem to see purpose as something that is only appropriate to talk about in the executive suite. Only it's like purpose is for educated, rich, successful people. It's like a luxury. And I very much object to that. And I really think it's important that more and more people and industries and managers understand that there is a huge purpose gap between frontline employees and the managerial staff. The managerial staff tends to have a lot more purpose in their role than people who are in a service industry working on the front lines, working on the factory lines. And that's really a shame, because the manager's jobs are no more purposeful than the jobs on the front line. But we really need to have a kind of messaging change in our society about what purpose means and how you live your purpose on a day-to-day basis to try to really close that gap. So that's one of the things I'm quite passionate about.
It's really interesting. One of the things that Ben and I have talked about before, as we've been working through our thoughts about purpose, is, and it sort of aligns, I think, well, definitely because you are the expert and the expert researcher, it makes clear an assumption that I had, which is you sort of grow, you don't seek purpose when you're just starting out in your career. You start with this idea of, you know, my purpose in this job is to make money so I can pay rent. and you are, it's not until you are later on in your career that you take the time, are given the time. It sounds like what you're saying is the level you rise to gives you the time and the credential to be able to say, oh, well, now you are earning more and everyone assumes you're wiser. So now you get to think about purpose. Right?
Right. And I really think we need to blow up that idea because, so first of all, then if we take that, then we're defining purpose as a luxury for later.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also, by the way, defining purpose kind of based on a socially constructed status of job. But instead, I define purpose really as embracing a purpose mindset. And I've repeated this phrase a couple times. My students always laugh because I repeat it over and over again in hopes that repetition will really get it into everybody's brain. That a purpose mindset is using your gifts in keeping with your values to make a positive impact on the lives of others. And so what that means is, what are you good at? What do you care about? And what can you do that is going to help other people? And so when we think about it that way, the folks who are working, quote unquote, just to pay rent, well, they may actually be working they're using their gifts, and a value is actually maybe supporting their family, putting food on the table, having a roof over their heads. And so who are they positively impacting? They're impacting the people that they love. They're in fact impacting folks with the jobs that they are doing. Whether or not those jobs seem to be very important in society's eyes. And the more that we can think about purpose in that much more granular way, mm-hmm. I think the more that it really demystifies it for all of us and makes it accessible for as many people as possible.
I love that perspective because I do think that there is a perception gap where once you start earning enough that you can give back to a community or you can find time to volunteer or you can donate, that you've reached a level of status where you are sort of quote unquote doing something, and that people who are earning enough to cover their rent, feed their family, or just feed themselves are somehow not achieving. They're not doing as well. But if you are doing those things within the structure of what you can accomplish at any given time, then that sort of places that, to me, places everyone on this even keel, sort of with that idea that, you know, the more blessed you are, the more you can bless others, right? And if you are, if you just have tighter boundaries, then you create your blessings within the boundaries you have.
And also the idea of thinking about how to build purpose now and not just later when and if something happens. There's right. this wonderful parable that's often told in the professional and work literature and the work coaching literature of the traveler who comes across three men laying bricks. And he asks the first one, "What are you doing?" And the man says, "I'm putting one brick on top of the other." And that's totally true. The second one says, "Well, I'm building a wall." That is also true. And the third one says, "I'm building a cathedral." And that's true as well. And the way that the parable is usually told is that we all want to be that third guy. We all want to see the larger why behind what we do. We all want to have a calling in our work to build something greater. And that's usually where the parable ends. It had always bugged me for a while because the thing is, the only way that you build a cathedral is by putting one brick on top of the other and by building walls. And so if we're only focused on the cathedral and not focused on the brick by brick daily effort, which, by the way, is not glamorous. It isn't stuff that a lot of us really even pat ourselves on the back for very often. It's hard work. And we all know the things that we do think are meaningful, but that are really difficult in our lives. that's putting one brick on top of the other. And so I've sort of become a champion of the first man who's putting one brick on top of the other, because I really relate to that in my life. I've got five kids, and parenting is often like putting one brick on top of the other. And it's downright exhausting.
Mm-hmm. It's like putting one brick on top of the other. And then when you turn around, someone comes and takes four of those bricks and puts them under.
Throws them at their brother.
Throws them at your brother. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm right there with you.
I love all that. It's so good. And I don't want to try and take any credit for advancing the beauty of that parable, but I think it's also easy to imagine what the fourth or fifth person does, which is building community or building a place where worship and love happens. Like even, you know, these even more grander things than the building, you know what I mean? Which I think is, and the person that laid that first brick is doing it too. You know, it's so cool. It's beautiful. I love that.
So yes, you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because there is another parable that is totally disconnected from it, but that also involves a cathedral. And I recently saw it, and I'm trying to figure out a way to meld the two together. And this is this parable of the priest, the architect, and the builder. And the idea is that to create a church community, to create this sort of community, you need somebody to physically build it. Well, you need somebody to design it. You need somebody to have the vision. You need somebody to physically build it. And then you need somebody to build the community and inspire people within it. And so, yes, I have been thinking about this idea of how to expand this into something really around purpose and meaning in our lived communities as well.
Yeah. Okay, I have a off-script question I have to ask. As we've been talking about, like, organizations and maybe the, you know, the little guy or the person that maybe hasn't had the opportunity to see and understand their purpose in the organization or their life, whatever. We have heard plenty about younger generations, Gen Z and so on, you know, really caring a lot about cause-based organizations, either as the people they purchase from or the people that they choose to be their employer, whatever it might be, you know, people that care about something and are doing something good for the world and able to prove it and all of that. Is there any research that you've stumbled upon that is like helping prove this case about organizations that fully understand their purpose and or help everyone in the organization understand their purpose in the work that they're doing and such in a way that they're maybe succeeding in either hiring or attracting younger generations and such? Has there been any data to like prove that that's a real thing or that it's working?
The organizational purpose world is sort of split into the external messaging around purpose and the internal purpose of the organization. Hmm. So from a consumer perspective, having an external marketed story of purpose for your product can really be a selling point. If you know that you are buying something that is ethically sourced, that is recyclable, that is biodegradable, things that may be in keeping with your values, then that can be good from a consumer perspective and make them want to buy the product. But that's all external messaging. Then there's the internal purpose and mission of the organization and whether that is lived in the company culture. And that's something that is harder to do. And that's the stuff that I'm actually more interested in. The external stuff really has been in the last, I don't know, 8-10 years, a lot of companies have been flexing about purpose, have been really messaging lots of stuff around how awesome they are in terms of doing well for the community. If internally they are a kind of a cutthroat, terrible work environment, or if there is a real disconnect in the hierarchy of the company, then that is not a purposeful place to work. So thinking about purpose internally is really more about reminding each individual that they can use their gifts in keeping with their values to make a positive impact through their role in the company. And so this is around, you know, acknowledging people, catching people doing good things, and focusing on the way that teams can work together toward a greater good. I think so much of the corporate purpose messaging has been outward facing, even when we think about maybe trying to say, oh, we're going to have a good company culture by volunteering for a cause together as a company. That's still external facing stuff. Mm-hmm. No, the lived day-to-day purpose is that you, me, all of us, we want to know that the work we're doing matters. And it is incumbent on the folks higher up in the organization to make sure that they are recognizing the impactful work that others are doing, and then helping people, in fact, rise up to do more of the things that they clearly care most about.
So, question for the plenty of organizations out there that are doing a lot of those community impact things that maybe someone that might be listening to this episode and saying like, shoot, I thought that was the internal thing. I thought I was, you know, what's like a first step for them to, you know, bring it to that internal focus, that internal message in a really like authentic way, especially if they're in a spot where maybe they thought they were, air quotes, doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things that I have been encouraging is for executives and managers, anybody who has those one-on-ones with subordinates to check in on progress and see how things are going, to first do a purpose statement exercise themselves. And I, on my website, on christinewhelan.com, I have some free, I have free exercises. I have some digital exercises. And then I also work with companies to customize these exercises so that they are really tailored to the values of the organization as well. But if first the manager does one of these purpose statement exercises and thinks about what their gifts are, what their values are, how they want to make a positive impact, and then also what are the things that might get in the way, the fears and anxieties, the tripping points of this exercise, and then what purpose-based commitments do they want to make? So all of this is in one fairly easy to do, small steps, kind of Mad Libs exercise. First, the manager, you have to do it yourself before you're going to ask anybody else to do it. Then you ask the folks who are working with you to do this exercise and do it in a work context. So think about their job, their role, this company, as they are doing it. What are the gifts that they want to bring to their job, that they want to use more of, that they really want to work on? What are the values that they want to guide them in the workplace? And who do they want to positively impact? How do they see their role both internally and externally to a customer? Then, if you have this purpose statement exercise for your employee in their file, I'd recommend that a manager look at this before every check-in and say, all right, if this person is going to really succeed in this organization, we need to make sure that they are using at least one of these gifts that they are saying are really important to them. Are they actually able to impact the stakeholders that they care most about? How can we do that? And certainly, there are going to be some times where somebody is going to want to use a gift that you don't need them to use in, you know, in your particular organization at this moment. That's why you list multiple ones, and you can work on it. This exercise has a couple benefits. First of all, it shows that you care, right? That you care as a human being about another human being, and if you've done the exercise yourself and you show them that you've done this, then you can already have a sense that we're in this together. The second thing is that it almost provides sort of a roadmap and a growth plan, because if you are doing this over a couple check-ins and you say, gosh, you know, you've met these, you're doing this now. Is there anything else that you want to add to it? What do you think your next quarter could look like? And by doing that, then you can have both individuals, and you can do this in terms of teams as well, come together to know and be reminded that the work that they are doing is purposeful, because that's the really, I think one of the really core points about this is that all of us are doing purposeful work day in and day out. This is not a matter of adding more things to our plate. This is actually about giving ourselves credit for what we are doing. And if we feel that our day is not being spent using our gifts and keeping with our values in a way that makes us feel good about doing something for the world, you can have one of two things happen. You can either change your behavior, or you can say, huh, are those values actually my values? Or are those shoulds that I think I should value, but really I value something else, and really I'm actually acting toward the things that I really do care about? Either way, this is a great check-in to see where you are, what you care about, and how you can actually do something about it. And managers and employees can join together on this.
Do you find in that work, when you have to have conversations about people with that sort of what you say your values are versus what your, you know, what your actions actually belie your values are, do you find that there are people out there where you or the person, you know, maybe the person coaching them can go, oh, you know, you said this was your value, but actually we can see this repeated activity that shows us, you know, and you can value other things and it's fine. Just don't lie to yourself.
That's it. Okay. So I have done this. By the way, I practice what I preach. So I have done all of these exercises myself and multiple times. And one of the things that I found was that doing a time diary was incredibly useful. So let's see, maybe it was like 5 or 6 years ago, I did a time diary. And what that meant was every 15 minutes, I would write down what I had done for the last 15 minutes for 7 days. It was really tedious. I do not recommend doing this very often, but maybe like once a year is a great sort of check-in. So by the end of the week, I had in 15-minute increments exactly what I spent my time on. And I did not lie to myself. I was very clear. I just wrote it all down. And then I kind of chunked it into, you know, time spent with at work, time spent with my kids, time spent sleeping, you know, all of these sorts of things. I'm type A, so I color-coded the whole thing. And then I looked at it. And I had quite a realization because I, for the last year previously, had been beating myself up for not getting enough work done. And I just could not understand. I was falling behind in everything I was doing. I was not meeting my deadlines. Why was I just suddenly just not meeting my expectations? And my expectations was that I was a full-time professor and speaker and writer. The thing is, I had 3 kids, ages 1, 3, and 5. And when I looked at my time diary, I noticed that the reason why I wasn't getting any work done was because I was spending only about 20 hours a week doing paid work, not 40. I was spending far more time with my children. And since I was a professor, you know, I had more of that flexible time schedule. Mm-hmm. And I realized, oh, okay, well, I am spending my time with my children. I am saying that I value being a very productive person in my career, but I'm not putting in the time. So, 2 choices. I either change my behavior, or what I really did was I changed my stated values. And I said, no, at this time in my children's life, I need to be with them. I want to be with them. And I actually dropped down to half time. And I was able to do that. Not for a long time, but I was able to do that while the kids were young. And that really helped me a great deal. And so I encourage everybody to do one of these time diaries so that you can figure out what you're actually doing. Now, not everybody has the luxury that I did of being able to drop down. But we all do have the ability to see whether how we are acting and what we are saying we are hoping that we're going to do, and then to make some changes around it. And then really kind of getting to the root of the problem, as opposed to just wondering why we're not meeting mm-hmm. our own expectations. So that's usually the example that comes to mind with this. And it's one that I think a lot of people can relate to.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, yeah, you know, lucky you to be able to, or fortunate you maybe to be able to make that life adjustment, right? For sure. I think, for the I don't know, the other side of that, the person that maybe just can't make that adjustment, right? Down to halftime or whatever. You at least do, I can see how you at least get the benefit of, you know, seeing where your time is going and maybe even making a small adjustment, you know, like, okay, well, I'm only putting in X amount of hours this week, or this has been the way it's been going, and this is why I'm not feeling as productive. So micro adjustment, I'm going to put in 5 more hours next week and see how I'm feeling. You know, like that might be all that it takes to, air quotes again, I'm doing a lot of air quotes. We should probably do a video podcast so people can just say it and I don't have to clarify, but that extra little bit of time might be all that it takes to feel more productive and, you know, experience the change that you're looking for.
I totally agree. I have a wonderful colleague named Alyssa Ashwood who does an exercise with her coaching clients. And she talks about asking this question of how much is how good? And what she's getting at is this idea that we sort of think that we have to do something for like a really long time to get the benefit of it. But sometimes if we just make a micro adjustment and do a little bit more of something, it actually meets the needs that we have. So, you know, if you want to read more to your children, saying that you need to block another hour out of your night every night, that's going to be much harder than saying, let's start with 10 minutes and those kinds of micro adjustments.
And when they're really young, you can even say, I'm going to read one more whole book to them because that whole book might only take like 3 minutes. No experience there coming out.
Or you can read the same book one more time in my experience.
Tell you what, Goodnight Moon. I could probably read that one without seeing the book.
Indeed, you can recite these books.
Yeah.
So when we, now I'm going to go slightly off script because really we have covered a lot of what we had prepared and we are actually getting into the home stretch for you, Christine, but as we were getting ready to hit record and we let you know about our project for this year, which is working on a book about purpose, you have been very kind to keep talking about yourself and not letting us turn the subject to us, but you said you would ask us a bunch of questions. So what about one really good question that you want to ask? And then we will pivot back to you.
Oh, that's okay. So you're writing a book about purpose, and particularly purpose as it moves from the individual world into the organizational world. Are you doing case studies with various companies, or are you looking at it from a top-down company perspective around purpose, or are you looking at it from a bottom-up individuals and their individual purposes leading into the larger corporate purpose?
Huh. Do you have an answer for that?
I was going to say, I think I have an answer for this question.
Okay.
And
maybe me
giving it, we can prove to Christine whether or not we're on the same page here.
Right.
And I will say, I think my answer might be a non-answer because we've stayed pretty flexible on like how this is coming together. Like we've got an outline and we've started to sort of chip away at it, but I don't know that we've totally come to agreement or have discovered yet like the timeline for this book or that hierarchy, maybe the way that you phrased the question. We've kind of attacked it in these three sort of chunks, right? Like the individual's purpose, the purpose of the work that they do within their organization, and then the organization's purpose itself, right? So I could see as this comes together, us kind of like flipping that one way or the other to maybe like drive home a certain message we might want to make more lasting or to, you know, really close it strong at the end or something. But so a bit to be determined, but I do feel like we've got these three buckets that kind of have a flow that are attached to each other, but I could see it kind of being flipped.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Sue, do you agree?
I do agree that it could tend to be flexible. I think as we sort of looked at laying out how we wanted to tell the story of purpose, we deliberately started with this idea of that capital P purpose, that big emotional, personal purpose. And for me, it's because I didn't start my career that way. So I think people really have this idea, as we were talking about, that you start with first just figuring out what you're doing, getting your feet, you know, getting your sea legs and figuring out what the heck you're doing or why you're doing what you're doing and why do I do this task and why do I have a job and it's Monday morning, why did I even wake up today? And you start there, and it is later in your career, maybe for myself, it was later in my career where I started thinking about what's my purpose as a human being and am I meeting my purpose as a human being? And so I really did want us to flip that dynamic and start with, like, let's first talk, who are you and how do you as a human being bring what your purpose is into everything you're going to do? And, and I think I really want, because we do work with, you know, we work with a lot of different clients, and some of them are solopreneurs or new businesses. And a thing that I feel really strongly about is that when people are starting a business, that they think about what their purpose is in the world, and then that they can build that business on their purpose and create their success that way. And that, you know, really to your point, Christine, with the idea that by finding this positive purpose in life and then creating a business around it, like, that we're all making good. We're out there building good things and making the world better.
Yeah.
So those were two non-answers. It's fun to give you nothing.
No, but this is interesting, because even talking about capital P purpose in your life is interesting. I think people's purpose changes over the course of their life.
Interesting.
And that's why I very much like the concept of a purpose mindset, because it actually tends not to lock you in to one capital P purpose, which especially for young people is really daunting. Like, how do I know the one singular life aim that is going to get me out of bed in the morning, you know, 40 years from now? You don't, right? I mean, it's like planning your 80th birthday party when you're 15. I mean, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
So the idea of purpose as a choice that you can make on a daily basis or on a job basis, I'm going to choose to use this part of my purpose in this role or in this company now. To me, that allows for people to wear more than one hat and to be a little bit more flexible. And certainly the definition of purpose is something that you do for more than a day, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't flit from purpose to purpose, but it also doesn't have to be for a lifetime. So some flexibility around these things, especially in the work world, especially as we all have, what is it, like 10 different jobs in our lives and jump from career to career. I think some flexibility is really going to be important both for employers and for employees.
Yeah. I'm sure I speak on behalf of Sue when I say it's incredibly helpful to hear you say everything you just said, because we've come across some research that has kind of confirmed this idea that purpose is continually changing. You know, it's this thing that's not evergreen. So that's just so nice to hear, because it's like confirmation that we're actually like sourcing some of the right material and using some of the good stuff for inspiration to like our thoughts on the topic and what's coming together for our version of this information and the content for the book. And I have to just share a little personal story about this, how maybe it's evolved for me, or maybe some awareness of my purpose early on in my career without maybe knowing what I was actually doing. But I remember really early on, so I went to school for graphic design. And when I, after I graduated, a high school buddy of mine and I, we started a print marketing company, and my main job was designing all the stuff that we did, or darn near all of it, right? And I remember like the thing that brought me the most joy in that job was when I would design something for someone And it fit in all categories, whether it was like a logo for a new business or even just like redesigning a business card, something so simple, whatever. And when they would come in and they would either pick up the finished product or look at the first version of it, the first proof or whatever, and you could like see the gasping, like, you know, kind of like that experience, like, oh my God, like that's exactly what was in my brain and you did it. Or that's not at all what I was thinking, but I love that so much more, you know, whatever, just like that moment of kind of like awe, you know, and believe me, it didn't happen every time, but when it did, it's like, yes, like that's the stuff. That's why I'm doing this, you know? And so like I would, like, if I had to like, and with the benefit of hindsight, looking back on what I did early on in my career, like my purpose was to create that moment for people, you know, where they, maybe them seeing the first version of a business card that they've ever had in their life is the thing that gave them confirmation, like, yeah, I'm doing the right thing. I'm starting this business or whatever, you know? So now I don't get to do a lot of that stuff today. Now, like leading a team and leading an organization that gets to maybe create those moments. But I think that that's maybe how my purpose has shifted a bit, in that I get to, you know, maybe encourage and develop and coach others to creating those moments, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I think that really is it, because the thread that probably runs through all of these things now that you can look back is that you wanted to create excitement for people, right? You wanted to create joy and awe and belief in themselves because they had a brand that made them feel like they were actually embodying the transition that they wanted to make. And so then you do that in various different forms throughout your life. And so one of the, when a student comes to me and says, oh, you have such a cool job, I want to do what you did, how did you get here? I always have the same opening of the answer. I said, do you want me to tell you a Just So story where I show you a line that goes from where you are to where I am? I said, because I can do that. That would be a lie, but I can do that. And so, or I could tell the messy story of how I actually got here. And when I work with young adults, I always use the idea of the movie reel of your life. If you're putting together the documentary of your life, there's going to be a lot of stuff that ends up on the cutting room floor. There are going to be a lot of things that you try that actually don't make it into the sizzle reel or into the documentary itself. And that's not to say that they were worthless. They actually then got you into the piece that does make it onto the main stage. So I see a lot of these transitions as ways of sort of creating what then we can look back on and say, oh, that is my journey of purpose. I can see the thread that ran through my life. But if we're going to talk about purpose on a day-to-day basis, and if we're going to talk about purpose for young people, they don't see that thread yet. So we've just got to take it one step at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. I am glad you brought it around to that thread, because I think I do have the advantage of being where I am at my career, and I can look back and say, you know, when we actually had a whole episode talking about whether we think your purpose changes or what. And I think we sort of arrived at this idea that, that there is evolution and you apply that core purpose in different ways as you grow and as you evolve. And so it's that, I think that's speaking to that same thing as you talk about the thread of that purpose. And it's much easier to see where I sit now than it was, you know, when I started as a part-time teller. And I was just a little friendly face.
Well, I feel like we've gotten a free masterclass. So thank you so much, Christine, for joining us. Such like great new insight that Sue and I will definitely have to like digest. I hope our audience has appreciated it. And also like lots of cool confirmation for stuff that we've been kind of hearing and seeing and thinking about throughout the process. So thank you so much. We do have our Something Awesome segment, which we have to close with. So if you haven't come prepared, it's okay. You've got a little bit of time. But we close every episode just sharing recommendations for cool things we've experienced, great books we've read, a new podcast we're listening to, a cool thing we've done, whatever it might be. And I'll kick us off, and you're on deck, Christine. So heads up. But we're going to share a link to a really cool story that I found where they being like the scientific community, finding that Van Gogh's painting of Starry Night is scientifically accurate. Now, accurate with what? Everybody's probably wondering. I certainly was wondering. It turns out there's this thing called atmospheric turbulence, which is like the irregular or chaotic flow of air in the Earth's atmosphere. And so they actually studied like all the way down to like the brushstroke level, the paint, and found that there's actually atmospheric turbulence that follows the same patterns and likely was following the same patterns at the time that it was painted. So either like Van Gogh is an alien and just knew that all of this was happening, or he got incredibly lucky, or something in between. I'm sure it was something in between, but I just think it's so amazing. And I do also like, now I'm extremely curious and I want to know, like, who was he connected to in the scientific community that he had some ability to understand or like see how clouds were moving or something? I don't know, whatever it was that informed him and informed probably, as the article says, like the second most famous painting ever, right? Behind the Mona Lisa, maybe. So a nice blend between two things that I geek out about often, art and science. So just a really cool, interesting article, quick read too. So we'll share the link to that. It was fascinating.
If I'm remembering right, when he painted Starry Night, he was in a mental institution. That might be a thing I'm making up. This is the internet. We can make things up on the internet. So, but I think that's true.
I just love the idea of Starry Night actually, like, you know, sort of existing in some atmospheric way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It being a real thing that happened on some real night. Yeah.
Super cool. I love that. All right. So I'm up. Am I up on deck now?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're up.
All right. So mine, I think, is going to be really more targeted and on point for purpose, since that's what I'm talking about here. Because after talking to everybody about purpose, and I would love to give people access to a digital exercise that people can build their own purpose statement in an app form. And the reason this is like super cool and exciting is because it's brand new. I just designed it with my colleague, Alyssa Ashwood, who I mentioned before, and this has been 6 years or more in the making. I've wanted to digitize my purpose statement forever, and she was the one who managed to make it happen, so I'm very grateful to her. And if you go to christinewhelan.com, christinewhelan.com/daily purpose, all one word, then you can test it out. And I would love people to test it out. And there is a thing at the end of the little digital exercise, it's a little widget. And it at the end, it'll say like, do you have any feedback? And I would love some feedback because it's really, really brand new. So christinewhelan.com/daily purpose, you can build your own Mad Libs purpose statement in a digital exercise. If digital exercises are not your thing, you can also off of my website download a PDF. And there is also a link to my audiobook, Finding Your Purpose, which was on the Associated Press bestseller list. So a lot of people seem to really like that one. And that is available as well.
Fantastic. We will share those links right along with the podcast and make sure,
for sure,
people can get right to them. Thank you for sharing that with us. So mine, because when this episode actually drops, it will be October. And that means we are well into spooky season. And I'm going to share a podcast I don't think I've ever shared before. And it surprises me because I've listened to it for a long time. And it is called Lore, L-O-R-E. And I'll share the link. It's lorepodcast.com. And it was created by a guy named Aaron Mankey. And he actually has a few different podcasts. This one in particular, it sort of favors the paranormal, and he tells paranormal stories and legends of sort of the spooky nature. And it is it's just a perfect little podcast with interesting history and paranormal spookiness. And I just love it. And I especially love it when I catch it this time of year, but you can listen to it all year long. So I will share that as well. Fun for a little October listen.
Yeah, for sure. As we were getting out of the house this morning, it was like, wow, fall has kind of like smacked us in the face. So this is, that content is like right on time. So yeah. Love it.
Yeah. And I think there are also still a couple of seasons of a Amazon Prime show that is also created by him that you can still watch, I think. Yeah. So thank you very much, Christine, for joining us. This was a really delightful conversation. We learned so much. We're going to, now we have to get to work. We have to write so much now after everything.
Well, I look forward to reading what you've written, and I hope you'll send me a copy and tell me when it comes out, because this sounds like a book that a lot of people are going to need to read.
Well, we certainly hope so.
Well, we hope so. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll certainly share.
Yeah. Thank you, listeners, as always, for joining us. You can always catch us on your favorite podcast app. You can see these links right there, or you can find everything about this episode on our blog at exclamationcuso.com/blog.
Thanks again, Christine. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome. We'll see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.